and welcome to the Off the Canvas podcast with me, Nick Hobbs. Now, Christmas can be a great time for some, but it can also be a very difficult period. So over the next few weeks, we're going to be speaking to some people within boxing about their own experiences around mental health, particularly around the festive period. With me today is one of the faces of Sky Sports Boxing, but you're going to get to know her an awful lot better in the next 20 minutes. It's Anna Woolhouse. Let's start with the most important question. How are you doing?
I'm good. December's a busy time for us in boxing, so I'm good. I like being busy.
Yeah, I'm sure. How was Monte Carlo?
Oh, Monte Carlo's amazing. It's very expensive. Makes you feel very poor.
You're the first person we've had this series, to my knowledge, never to have had a boxing fight. Is that right?
That is correct, yeah. Hit pads, because they don't hit back.
As the presenter of Sky Sports Boxing, you have a unique perspective on the sport. How did you get into the role you're currently in?
How did I get into it?
Yeah.
I was already working at Sky to work on Sky Sports News, and always followed boxing, loved it. And then Adam Smith, who, as you know, kind of boxing, asked me if I'd kind of be interested and give it a go, and the rest, I guess they say, is history.
So you've always been a bit of a boxing fan?
Yeah, I've always enjoyed watching it. Not to the extent I am now. I mean, I guess once you get involved in it, it's kind of all-consuming, isn't it? And I'm just completely immersed in it. I'm addicted now.
Has it? You say you do a bit of trading, a bit of hitting pads. Have you started doing more of that the closer you've got to boxing? Or?
Yeah, I think so. I do a bit with Darren Barker down at his gym. For me, it's my favourite kind of training because it's the only training really that switches off my brain, because you're so busy thinking about the combinations and what you're doing that kind of blocks everything else out.
It's going to sound very simple, but it's really hard, isn't it?
Yeah, really hard.
Does it kind of add a bit of respect to how you
really
see
hard,
the athletes?
It's absolutely knackering.
Yeah, it's horrible. Does it give you a bit of more respect when you see boxers, you know what they go for, a little taste of it?
Absolutely. I have utmost respect for anyone stepping in the ring, whether that's professional, amateur, white collar, whatever. Ultimate respect for anyone doing that. Yeah, it is tough.
Never been tempted for a white collar? I'm sure there's a box office charity event in the making here.
There's definitely a temptation, and something I have thought about a lot. I've been asked a few times, and Spencer Wallace has always asked me to do his event. And there's an event next year, Boodles Boxing, that I'm considering. I would like to do it just because I'd like to do the training and also to see if I could apply what I've kind of learned in the training in the ring. But I'm not going to lie, A, I'm scared, and B, it's just such a dedication, isn't it? It's a massive commitment. And also, I'm not sure, I don't know, what would it look like if I had a black eye on TV?
Do you think you'd earn the respect and the hearts of millions, Anna?
But I know. It's just tricky, isn't it?
Have you ever done any kind of just little kind of touch sparring in the ring or anything like that? Or
A little bit, but nothing to the extent of what would be required, no.
Okay, we'll catch up in a year, see where you're at with it. The phrase boxing community, it's quite a misleading phrase. It's such a kind of varied group, isn't it? But how have you found being chucked into their world?
Into the boxing community, I love it. And you know what? Everyone has just been really welcoming and just brilliant. The people I work with at Sky, the team, we always describe it, we're like a kind of travelling family. You know, we're just a really close-knit team, and I found everyone really, really lovely.
Do you see the sport differently from before you were working so closely in it?
Yeah, I mean, you get to know some of the boxers pretty well and get quite attached to them. So I guess that there is a little bit more of an emotional attachment knowing them. But I don't know. I guess so. You just get to see the ins and outs, don't you? You get to see everything, warts and all.
Yeah, you get to see how really tough the sport is. And we're recording this podcast.
How hard they train, dedication, everything. Yeah.
We're talking just a few days after Frank Buglioni is retired from boxing at 29 years of age. And 8 months ago, he was trying to win the British title outright. It's a tough game, isn't it?
Yeah, well, let's not forget last week, he was talking about potentially you know, trying to compete at world level again. It is a massive tough game, and we spoke about it on our podcast, Sky Sports, yesterday. You know, it's difficult, I think, for fighters to know when to hang up the gloves, isn't it? That's always the hardest thing. But once they're talking about retirement, I guess they've already retired, really, haven't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, a massive decision for Frank.
Yeah, so a brave decision to make. And speaking of being brave, you've been very open and very candid about some of the abuse you've suffered online from trolls. For those who are a bit unaware of what kind of form that's taken, could you just fill us in?
Yeah, it came after the White Parker fight. Just sort of tricky, and I just want to make it clear that I don't mind people having an opinion on me. I've never ever minded that, and I don't mind. People are allowed to comment on whether they like me or not, or whether they think I'm any good at my job. But, you know, that is acceptable, and I think that's kind of, you have to accept that working in the industry. What I draw a line at, and what this particular troll and trolls were doing, is when they get, you know, really personal and started sort of saying things about my family that they shouldn't. And, you know, we are only human. I know you have to have a thick skin, a rhino skin in this game. But, I'm only human and I have feelings. So something needs to be said. So I did. I decided to make a stand.
It's hard to get into the mind of a troll, but why do you think they do what they do?
Genuinely, this is something I've thought about a lot. When I put out the stuff that I did, I was amazed at the reaction that I got, the positive reaction of people just saying, you know, that their kids have been affected, or they've had someone else they know, or even they're going through it themselves. I don't know what these people think they're doing. It's normally faceless accounts, isn't it? They don't even have a profile picture. They're just keyboard warriors that think they have a given right to say what they think, no matter how much impact that's going to have on the other person. But I don't know.
Must be difficult for you being in a public face, in that you want to engage with fans. You want to use social media and be out there. Has it made you think twice at all about using things like Twitter?
Yeah. Again, something I was asked a lot when it happened. I genuinely thought about coming off. But I think you're letting them win if you come off. And also, why shouldn't I be able to put pictures up or say what I think? You know, that is the idea, isn't it, social media? Mm. But what needs to stop is these people being allowed to say such hurtful things. That something needs to be done about that. I don't know what you can do about that. I mean, do you verify everybody? Is that a way of doing it? I don't know. What do you think? I don't know.
It is a really tough one. It seems strange, though, that anyone would be allowed to be on a platform like that and just be completely anonymous and be free to just engage and say whatever they like without any sort of penalty. I suppose it's, hopefully it's people talking about it like this, and I'm sure maybe they do. I'd like to think that when they write things like that about yourself, they don't want to make your life worse. They don't want to really hurt your feelings. They're just, I don't know, bored, looking for a reaction. It's hard to tell, isn't it?
And that is a hard thing, and, you know, Some people have the view that if you respond to the trolls, then you're giving them, you know, airtime, aren't you? That you're acknowledging them and you're feeding them. But my view is that, okay, people can say what they think, they can have a comment, they can, you know, you can have free speech, whatever. But when it does start, you know, the things they were saying, my brother sadly passed away a few years back in an accident, and, you know, they were saying things like, your brother probably killed himself because of you. Jeez. And that they hope I die, you know, things like that. It's just, that's horrific for me to read, horrific for my family to read, and there is a line. So my personal opinion on that was that I needed to make a stand, and me speaking out that something needs to be done. So I don't know, it's a fine balance, isn't it, between not giving them the satisfaction by acknowledging them, but also if you don't speak out, then nothing's ever going to change.
What'd be interesting to hear from you on is, when you spoke out about this, as you said, you got a lot of support. How different do you think it would be if you didn't have that support, if you weren't the public face, and if you tweeted out people do support you and do say what a horrible thing to say? How different do you think it would be for those who don't have that sort of support?
I think it's very different. I think, you know, I was very lucky that I'd say the majority, majority of people that reached out to me were hugely supportive. This is something I have talked about a lot, that I think I am very fortunate. I do have kind of a bit of a mouthpiece and a platform to make a stance and get a response, and the positive response that I got. But also I think people that don't necessarily have that, well, you just kind of, I guess, that they're more alone, and that they don't have that ability to speak out and be heard, do they?
No, not at all. I mean, it's...
And that's what I'm saying about people that reached out to me saying, you know, either their child was going through it at school or they'd have personal experience of it, and just going, you know, thank you for speaking out about it, because the more people that speak about it that can try and make a difference, the better.
Mm. You've clearly got, you know, a certain strength to speak about this and a certain inner confidence to be able to speak openly. But how do you think, say, the teenage Anna Woolhouse would have dealt with a situation like that?
That's really interesting. You know what, you saying to me that I've obviously got this inner confidence to speak out about it. I still have, you know, I still worry. I still have, I have moments when I spoke out about it. I still have moments now of going, did I do the right thing? And you know, I don't know. I think I'd still be the same when I was a teenager. I don't think your fears necessarily leave you. I don't think I'd have done anything differently, but I still have the same kind of worries, I guess, as I did then.
Yeah, it might be a tough one, this, but you know, for people listening to this who are either going through something similar, or as you say, they've got kids or nephews or nieces, whatever, younger people going through this. Yeah. Is there any sort of advice or anything you can tell them dealing with something like this?
I think they need to speak out. I think if you are going through it, if it's happening to you, don't suffer in silence. You need to tell someone, and you need to speak out about it. And I think the more people that speak out about it, the more, I always say conversation makes change. So I think the more people that are speaking out about it, the better, really. And then hopefully something can be done about it. But don't suffer on your own, because you know what? Really grave things happen to people. We see it in the news, don't we? We see that, very sadly, some people even take their own lives over horrific bullying. So something absolutely needs to be done. And just don't be afraid to speak out, because you're not on your own. And it's not you that has a problem, it's the sad trolls. I still get some, but I'm pretty fortunate that I have some really lovely followers that end up kind of helping me out, and they comment for me on the trolls.
Anna's army.
Exactly. That's really nice, but I guess I'm quite lucky to have that.
We're here talking about boxing, and we're talking about mental health, and as it is, we are approaching the festive period. We're talking about how hard Christmas can be for some people, especially for those dealing with bereavement. And you mentioned what happened with your brother, tragically, a little earlier there. I wouldn't ask us about you if you hadn't opened up about it. But could you explain what happened there with your brother?
Yeah, no, it was 4 years ago. My brother Harry, he worked in Singapore. He was a chemical engineer, and he was kind of a guy that lived life to the full, shall we say, you know, always sporty and doing stuff. And he's gone with some mates to over to Malaysia for the weekend to kite surf. And they were on their way back, and they took a bus back to Singapore. And it was raining, and basically the bus slipped and went down a ravine. And tragically, Harry was the only one that was killed on the bus. So that kind of changed my life forever, April the 20th. So, and I found out through one of my brother's friends, who I actually didn't know. I just finished the shift on Sky Sports News. I'd been on an early shift, and I got home, and I don't know how it happened, because normally when you get messages from people you don't know, they don't crop up, but it pops on my phone. And I had a message basically telling me that my brother had been killed. So it was, I had to tell my parents, which is not the easiest thing. But coming up to Christmas, it's not an easy time, and his birthday's around that time. So I totally sympathise with anyone that's going through that.
Yeah, sorry to delve into painful memories, but what was that first Christmas like? It sounds like a big personality. It must have been yes. missed.
Yeah, first Christmas was, oh, I don't know, I always, when people ask, you know, what it's like or anything, honestly, that first year was quite a blur, I guess. First Christmas was tough. We actually didn't spend it at home. We spent it with friends away, my mum, my dad, because I don't have any other brothers and sisters. I come from quite a small family. I don't have any cousins or anything, so it was just kind of three of us. But we went down to Wales for Christmas. And, it was just odd, I guess. It's not easy. I always say it's the first of everything. Do you know what I mean? Like the first. The anniversary, the birthday, the Christmas. Don't get me wrong, there are things that never leave you, and I still have days now, 4 years on, that it just hits you like, you know, a ton of bricks, basically, that you think, God, he's not here. But of course, that never goes, but definitely the first are hard.
Yeah. Say that first year was horrible, a real blur for you. Are there any things that you can pinpoint that helped you cope with that process?
Yeah, definitely. You see it on my Instagram, I'm massively into my training.
Right.
And I remember a couple of weeks after he was killed first, I just needed to run. It was my kind of thinking time, and my brother was really supportive, like I said, so it was kind of, I feel close to him when I'm doing sports and training, so fitness and training was a massive help, and still is today. Like, that is definitely my kind of outlet and coping mechanism, and mentally and physically, I guess. But also, I'm not afraid to say it. It took a while, but I spoke to a counsellor, a grief counsellor, and also did some therapy and talking to people, and it's such a cliche, but talking helps. It really, really, really does help. And I think a lot of people I think grief's a funny thing, that people are often, when it's as soon as someone dies or someone passes, I think people are around the first month or so. And I always say it's after the funeral, it's after those few months after that things start to quieten down. That's when people need their friends and need people to talk to. And I personally found talking to a counsellor really beneficial. So, yeah.
It sounds like that would be the advice that you'd give others.
Yeah, definitely.
Opening up and speaking.
Definitely. It's easier said than done, because I think people, especially when it's been a period of time since it happened, I think people, I know it's perfect experience. I kept thinking, are people just expect me to be okay? And I still think that today, but when you think about it, it's a massive thing that happened in your life. And you know, even now, 4 years isn't that long. I mean, don't get me wrong, you never forget, but you do learn to deal with it. But I definitely say talk to someone. And just for me, I still like talking about my brother, because kind of keeps his memory alive as well.
Yeah. How is what's Christmas like now in the Woolhouse household? How's 2018 looking?
So Christmas, I will be with my mum and dad, and we've got my dog as well, Skip, and my mum's got a little dachshund as well called Dale. So they're different, Dale. So Christmas will be spent with them in Norfolk. I'm really lucky. They are amazing parents, super positive, and we just try and make, it sounds really bad to say, but the best out of a bad situation. You know what I mean? We try and do good things and remember him in a really nice way and try and smile about it now. We'll go for walks on Frankaster Beach, where my brother used to kite surf, and you know, just kind of have some nice family time.
Anna, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and speaking. Absolutely fantastic to hear from you.
You're welcome.
Great to speak to Anna there. I'm sure she won't like using the term brave, but it's a hard one to avoid when you hear what she's been through. Now, if you are finding Christmas tough this year, or perhaps don't know the best way to deal with the festive period, help is available. Please visit www.thecalmzone.net. And thanks for listening to Off the Canvas podcast.